listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 27, joined by my co-host, Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
I'm good.
Doing all right. I'm hanging in there. Got my voice back a little bit, so been under the weather, but I'm doing all right.
Know that allergies have been killing everybody.
Unfortunately, it turned into something worse for me, so turned into sinus infection and all that other crap. So, taking it easy and, but I'm getting a lot better now. So at least I've got my voice tonight.
Yeah, I know that since we didn't really have a spring, you know, we went from cold to all of a sudden just, you know, summer in St. Louis. And I know that's really messing a lot of people. There's a couple people in my softball team that are having to like be on like a IV of Zyrtec, it seems like, just able to, you know, breathe. Yeah. Well, guys, let's go ahead and just get into speaking of.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of like things that, IVs, you know, the Cardinals, damn, that's a good transition there, unfortunately, sadly.
Yeah. So, drip. Let's get an update out here on the Cardinals. The Cardinals right now, 27-42, 8.5 games back in the Central, which is last. They're 9.5 games back at the last wild card spot in the National League, which, of course, is last. In fact, they're 28th out of 30th in MLB in the rankings right now. Since our last session, they went 1-5 with a series loss to the Reds and a sweep by the Giants. That this past series really hurts, especially the Giants, especially when
we ended up leading. Losing that. Yeah, that was horrible. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So let's just get going on this. OJ, I mean, we talk about this every single week, but, you know, are you starting to feel a little bit more like, crap, these Cardinals suck and there's no recovering for them at this point in time? I mean, because we thought that maybe they were obviously on an upswing, but since then they've gone 2-10 since that little upswing they have. What's your thoughts on this, OJ?
I'm pretty much out on the team this year at this point. I don't know. I just think they have made some very terrible, irreversible mistakes, like mistakes that can't be reversed in season, like how they go about preparing for the season and how they, you know, are trying to coach guys up, how they're attacking pitchers and stuff. It can be hard to make big changes, that kind of stuff, during the season. So I think they kind of screwed themselves. And further, I think Ali Marmol needs to go. Mm-hmm. I've seen enough from him now. Some of his comments and stuff specifically makes me think he doesn't know how to lead people at all.
Yep.
And I think he's kind of getting the team quite a bit himself as well. Not only do I have issues with some of his bullpen management, which you could say about a lot of managers, honestly, but specifically what I'm thinking of is I saw an article in The Athletic recently. It was like maybe a couple games ago. And the whole point of it was, you know, they're interviewing players and stuff. And there's, you know, they're sitting there like, oh, man, we feel like we got to be perfect because all these other teams capitalize on every mistake we make and all this kind of stuff. But Ali Marmol's saying the same damn thing, which, you know, you can't feed into that if you're going to be a manager. Like, if you want your team to be successful, you can't feed into that kind of concept.
We all want perfection, but it's nearly impossible to get.
Yeah. You contrast it to Bradley Carnell, who there was an interview I remember with him where he's talking about it was when they're going to play like Real Salt Lake or something like that. And he was, they're asking him about the altitude and all that. And he just said, I don't believe in that. Which, you know. I don't believe that. Whatever, but the idea is you're setting these expectations for your players. And right now, Ali Marmol's saying, yeah, man, you guys just have it tough. It's such a shame, you know, just everything's going against you. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's feeding into that crap, and it's not helping. It's not helpful at all.
Yeah, and I think that at some point, and we'll definitely talk about Marmol and his job security and stuff like that a little bit later in the podcast. Once we get a little bit further into the Cardinals and stuff like that as well. But I agree with you, OJ, that I believe that Marmol, he like when I'm watching him and the feeling that I sort of got last year that he had a lot of respect, but he wanted to be like one of the guys. You know what I mean? Like yeah. He seemed like, hey, yeah, I want to be your buddy. I don't want to be like, okay, like I'm your manager, I'm your boss. You're gonna do what I tell you to do, kind of thing. He like wanted to be a buddy, and I still see
that's young management.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes that works.
That's a mistake.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but that's part of young management, and that's literally what part of it is. And while that's great and all for a while, if things are going well, but whenever shit's hitting the fan, you can't just be their buddy anymore. You unfortunately got to lay down. You know, that's the
agreed.
Problem.
And when I watched this last game too, you know, where we lose in I think it was like what the 10th inning or something like that, after giving up like 4 runs in the 9th. You know, but you're watching most of these games, like even still, and I get it's important, but Marble's still like joking and smiling in the dugout and stuff like that. And some part of that is important, you know, because you want to have positivity and stuff, but I'd be pissed. Like I'm tired of losing. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Like I think
and that's where the disconnect was for sure. And I felt like there was a lot of disconnect, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I would know the exact right buttons to push. I just know that you can't let the players get comfortable with this idea that, like, the universe is, like, causing us to fail and we have to be perfect and all that shit. You know what I mean? If you feed into that, then they'll never be successful because they're just going to have tight cheeks on.
Right, and what you're telling them is if you're not perfect, it's still not your fault. You know what I mean? That's literally what you're saying to your players. Yeah, it's like, be perfect, but it's...
Yeah. Most teams don't have they don't pay for their mistakes. You know, most teams don't. Only you guys, particularly. That is another aspect.
Just for sure. Yeah, exactly. It's just a stupid statement. But again, we'll get to Marmol a little bit. We'll get more depth in that aspect of things. You know, Adam, what's your thoughts here now? I mean, do you think I think you and I are kind of the same.
Yeah. We have for
like
a while.
OJ, who's been our very like optimistic,
so optimistic.
Guy, always looking. Yeah. Yeah, like all of a sudden, I'm done. So
this year has been a wash for a while. Sure, it felt like things might be turning around for us, but it seems like as usual, you know, when our pitching is getting better, then our bats were starting to slip, and it was just kind of it's like nothing could jive, and now. It's back to – it's like we just can't get our shit together this year, you know. And to be back – what is it like? We're 15 games under 500, I think, right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's incredible. I mean, it's just I mean, I guess, like I said, as Cardinal fans, we're certainly spoiled. You know, a lot of teams sit here year after year after year. But the fact is we have the talent. We should be better than this. You know, I know that there's some holes that we have to fill, but man, to be 15 under 500, just with this team, with how many gold gloves, you know, with how many bats and everything else, even with the pitching woes that we've had, it just, it's infuriating sometimes, you know, but then also we see those management calls or miscalls and not pulling our pitchers out when they need to be pulled out as well. So there's a lot to the management piece. And the fact is our front office, which I'd like to talk about here in a little bit as well, where I don't feel like we're getting that support either.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Adam, you bring up a really good point. If this was like, okay, we knew that like after losing Pujols, after losing Molina, and let's just say Wainwright, you know, retired. Essentially, like, okay, we know we're going to be taking a step back here because, you know, we don't have Nato, we don't have Goldschmidt or something like that, right? Yeah. Then it's going to be easy for us to be like, all right, well, the fun games are over. Reality is hit. You know, like St. Louis people are going to freak out and say, fire everybody, trade everybody away or whatever because we're spoiled brats when it comes to baseball. I totally understand that. But that's not the case this year, right?
Yeah.
This is essentially the same team that we had last year, you know, minus Pujols, minus Molina, minus a few starters on, or like, again, especially on the pitching side of things. But this seemed to be pretty much a plug and play.
Pretty much the same thing.
Last year. Yeah. You know,
and to be performing at this subpar, you know, and it's very much like the Blues, you know what I mean? Where we were missing a few, you know, some of those components from before, but we just completely just fell apart.
It's a
complete collapse. And this is where we are. We're at a complete collapse. There's no getting around it at this point. So, you know, there's no coming back from this year.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, go on, OJ. Sorry.
Well, that's kind of what set me down on the being done with the team is I think it's at this point, given the team you've got, you should be much better than you are. So I think that management made a lot of terrible decisions and they screwed themselves. It's just too late.
You nailed it. Yep.
So in like,
and somebody needs to be held accountable.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to sound weird.
If I was Bill DeWitt, though, I would be firing people for sure.
Damn right. I mean, how you can talk nice and you can do this and you can have little pep talks all you want. But what gets a team really fired up when you make heads roll? Something like that has to happen before you start seeing some changes, you know?
Yeah, sometimes. I think it's really
it's going to have to at this point. Somebody's head's got to roll at this point to at least start something up. You know what I mean?
Well, to me, it's more about a lack of competence, like a lack of judgment, really. You know, it's the lack of judgment shown is just inexcusable. So you don't want somebody like that as part of your organization.
No. And unfortunately, it seems like our team, at least from the comments that I've heard from Arenado, is that it just was it today or yesterday, whatever, was saying that they basically all have faith in him and that it's not all him. And I kind of read between the lines there, and I think that he's shifting a lot more of the blame to the front office in the what he's saying. I think that that's what he's saying, is that it's not our, as much as everybody's wanted to shut on Marmol, while he does deserve some of the blame, it feels that he's trying to say, look, he's been dealt a bad hand, and you know where that comes from.
He said that literally, but he also mentioned specifically the younger players, which that was kind of odd to me. He said we have a young team, which really we don't have that young.
Not really.
No, yeah, we really
not
don't.
Really not all that young, honestly.
I mean, you're kind of relying on Donovan and Gorman to be something. They really wanted to rely on Walker to begin the year, and he obviously wasn't ready. I mean, I could kind of see why a veteran player would have those kind of comments. Like, he's watching he's watching Jordan Walker out there take fly balls and stuff too, and he knows he's not a major league outfielder yet.
I'm looking at our average age, and it's 28.42.
Exactly. Well, that's true. There are some young guys we're relying on, so I guess that comes from. But I mean, like, you could say Nolan Gorman and Brendan Donovan have been good. Walker's been disastrous in the outfield, but he's been hitting okay since he got back up. But then on the pitching staff side, Liberatore's been pretty good. Woodford's been disastrous, but I don't know if you'd even call him young anymore. I mean, I don't know. To your point, though, it very well may not be Ollie Marmol. As much as I said before, he has to go. It's because I'm assuming a lot of these decisions with like setting the lineup and stuff are up to him. But if it's not, then no, I'm not making any judgments on him then. It's just making those decisions.
If it's not then if we're not changing management, then what else do we change? Do we change some aspects of the team?
Yeah. Because, I mean, do you really think that a lot of these players are all of a sudden just shit? Like they were just, you know, really playing above their heads, like by far. Yeah. Entire careers, or is it like something wrong this season specifically?
Right. You
know? Yeah, we're gonna have 43 people all of a sudden decide, or just all of a sudden like age hits them all at once, or they're just all having a bad season. I mean, that can happen, but
it's not old. Like Tommy Edmonds at defense is falling off. Like there's lots of like
Arenado's defense is nowhere near where it should be.
I was going to say not at all. I was going to say all these years he's been getting, you know, gold gloves. He's not getting one this year.
He's not old enough to be like declining like that. You know what I mean? He's still early 30s. Like he's not old enough to start losing his defensive capabilities. You know, it's obvious something weird's going on.
Yeah. It looks like go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's going to sound weird, but I've always said it when you're building an organization, you know, and you're building your home, so to speak, for a team, it's going to sound weird, but you build your basement, you don't build an attic. What I mean by that is like a basement is a solid foundation, even though it could be ugly. It's not going to be like that pristine thing or whatever. It is a solid place that you know that you could live in your home. It should be a solid base that you build your house on. You don't build an attic where an attic's going to be an empty space that's full of a bunch of wood, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it. But if you make one wrong move, you fall through the ceiling, right? And I know that doesn't sound like really anything, but what I mean by that is, like, okay, so a player leaves and you remove one of those trusts. Now, all of a sudden, now you don't have that support, and now you're going to find yourself on an island looking for the next truss to be able to step on. You're eventually going to fall through on fall through that drywall, right? Fall through the ceiling. And I feel like that's not what this team was built on. Like, again, losing, we knew that coming into the season, losing Molina was going to be a massive, massive loss, not just on the offensive side, even though he wasn't really producing
offensively. Well, more on the defensive side for sure. And we knew that.
And not even just the defensive side, but the way he can manage leadership. The game. Mm-hmm. We knew that that's what was going to end up happening. And I'm now at this point, after we've seen, you know, what, 71 fucking games from this shitty team, I'm wondering if Molina wasn't the actual coach last year compared to Marmol. And now that Molina's gone, Marmol's being really exposed for the decisions and stuff like that as well. Because you can't tell me that when you remove one cog of what we had last year, all of a sudden we're going to be this crap team that's falling through the ceiling. You know what I mean? To me, I really struggle with it.
Yeah, and I mentioned that, you know, a few weeks back about how we had the leadership and we're missing that within the team, for, you know, so to speak. We've been missing that. I felt like Goldschmidt was going to step up, at least it seemed like he was trying to kind of step up and be that leader. At least I thought, maybe not. I don't think that any real clear leader has stepped up, sort of a captain of the team, truly a captain of the team that really has stepped up, and especially to that level. I mean, it's really hard to step in those shoes, though, of somebody that's been, you know, playing for over 20 years, you know, and has, especially for the Cardinals, and knows the ins and outs more than anybody else, and has really commanded the game from, you know, really ran that game, you know, and everybody trusted as well. So it was a big loss. You're right.
Yeah, I just, again, it's one of those things that I don't think it's, you know, even losing Molina, which we know is a game changer. I don't see how that could have changed us going from almost winning 100 games to almost now going on pace to lose over 100 games. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that maybe, but that would be like a historic.
Well, like, it's a combination. Yeah. It's not just that. There's a combination of a lot of things going on, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of small things and they're just adding up. It's the fact that we don't have that leadership, the fact that we have all the injuries in the outfield, the fact that our pitching has been abysmal, the fact that, you know, our lineup has been crap and we're leaving men stranded on base. And, you know, our the fact that we haven't been disciplined at the plate. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but these things add up, you know?
Yeah. And it's a good point. Well, yeah, let me ask you guys. Go ahead, OJ, sorry.
I was going to say, it comes back to approach to me. I mean, to not be able to, like, you know, how many times are you going to have bases loaded with less than 2 outs and not get a run out
at all? And that's been going on for how long now?
Yeah.
And we've been leaving men like, stranded all the damn time.
Yeah, so it's
run production is shit.
Seems like an organizational refusal to value situational hitting. You know, it's like they say, oh, that's old school crap. We don't need to worry about that. You know what I mean? And so now they're paying the price, though. This is what happens when you don't respect the game. Really, that's what it is. I get the feeling that there's some people from like MIT or some shit that thought they know better than all the dumb jocks. And so, you know what I mean? Like, that's how it feels like to me. I'm dead serious. And now they're learning the hard way that, hey, maybe you actually should know something about baseball before you go making on-field decisions. Sorry, I can rant about that forever.
No, but you're not wrong. And that's the thing about it is, like, as much as the game is changing, there's a reason why the game was played the way it was for hundreds of years. You know what I mean? Not that long, but you know what I mean. Well, I mean, it really is hundreds of years at this point that baseball's been played, but
hundreds of years.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, especially, like, it's just been, when we grew up watching baseball, you know, the game was changing, but it was a slow change. Now it's this really fast, hard, progressive changing.
Of course.
That, you know, it's going towards, you know, Moneyball. And now they obviously, MLB wants just strictly offense. And You know, I don't know. Maybe that's part of the reason why we're really struggling as well, as our defense can't shift over. You know what I mean? And our pitchers are just pitching to, you know, like they did last year. I don't even know. You know, I don't know what that looks like, but it's just kind of crazy. And by the way, so I had to look this up real quick. Believe it or not, Nolan Arenado is still right now on pace to win the Golden.
There's no way. There's no way. I was going to mention there was some statistics I was just looking up a little bit ago. He has a -2 defensive run right now. -2 defensive run save this season so far. Last year he had +19.
I'm not saying he's never finished
a season lower than +6. I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, again, and I'm not necessarily agreeing with it, but maybe it's just because he's the name or whatever, but they have him above everybody else at this point. But also the these guys at Sports
Well,
not
it
or
could
whatever,
be his
they,
reputation.
They have,
absolutely. It yeah, certainly exactly. could be reputation.
Yeah. I mean, no
but it
one
wouldn't
in their
be based upon performance.
Mind. Yeah, no one in their fucking right mind would say he's the leader, so who's they, no. Josh?
It's
I want to know not paying attention.
Yeah, I'm not getting on you or anything. I'm disputing their, or at least saying
I agree.
Their analysis of that is either based upon reputation or whatever, but certainly not performance though. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with you there because they also have Tommy Edman winning the utility, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense either. So
no.
Yeah.
Oh, Brendan Tommy Edman last year. Donovan won it last year. I think he had like a -2 DRS across all positions overall. I just think it's not as hard for a utility player to learn to win it. I don't think you have to be as impressive defensively, I guess, since you're playing so many different positions.
But so, I mean, that's a good point, too, because you're just playing.
I haven't looked at the field for that one either, so I don't know. The third base one, though, would be absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, with -2 right now. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's definitely struggling in that aspect of things. But let's get to this this question here for us, guys. You know, do we believe there's anybody that we could even trade for right now to be able to save the season, so to speak? You know, do you guys believe? And we'll start with you, I guess.
I don't know about save the season, but
yeah,
I mean, looking at what we got here. I mean, I know it's been kind of tossed around. There's been some controversy or some drama. Goldschmidt's name has been tossed around there because obviously, you know, he's a free agent after next year. Yeah. And obviously he carries with him, you know, a lot of value, and we might be able to get, you know, some good pitchers out of him potentially, especially if we're in a mode right now where it's like, okay, we're on a rebuild or whatever this is. The fact that the thing is if we look at it and say Goldschmidt's not going to stick around because we're not a winning team anymore. If we're really looking to say, okay, we need to fix our main plot holes here our main holes to patch up, so to speak, that's a possibility. Obviously O'Neill, as long as he comes back and has a good return, because obviously he's been, you know, injured, that's a possibility as well. You know, we have some options out there. I would of course love to get rid of some more pitching, but the fact is I don't think we're going to get much for him. And obviously I want to keep, you know, Montgomery as well, you know, for starting pitching, but Flaherty, I would love to ditch as well, but I don't think we're going to get shit for him. So that's just my analysis.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring up, you know, like O'Neill, for example. So there was a trade that got presented. This is another trade rumor. And it's funny how, like, there's so many trade rumors that consistently have been linking the St. Louis Cardinals to Shane Bieber for God knows how long.
We talked about
Bieber probably 2 or 3 times.
Yes.
You know what I mean? In this podcast alone, on the offseason, during the season,
still,
stuff like that.
They're
right
still
now,
going forward.
Yeah. What they're saying is Brendan Donovan, O'Neill, and Libitor for Bieber. And to me, it's a tough pill to swallow because, like, O'Neill, I'm cool getting rid of. Libitor is really hard to get rid of, but you're getting Shane Bieber. You're getting a top in, you know, top ace, essentially. To me, getting rid of Donovan's going to really suck, but, you know, the reason why they're saying this trade would work is that O'Neill, even though he's struggling, you know, Cleveland really needs a power bat and they really need an outfielder. Well, there's your guy. Mm-hmm. They really need a guy that's going to be able to help in the utility side on the, in their infield, specifically around second base. Well, that's right up there with Donovan. And obviously Libertor would just be a replacement player for Bieber. So, you know, OJ, what do you think about that trade? Do you think that would be able to save the season? Because in my opinion, I don't think that would be able to save our season. Mm-mm. But, you know, what's your takes on that, OJ?
So, yeah, I don't think there is a trade that saves the season at this point. That's the issue. It's everything's just too dysfunctional. I think they need an offseason to reset at this point and get their heads straight. Assuming, you know, that the front office finally realizes that they need to change their ways. But anyway, the point is, I wouldn't hate the trade. How many years does Bieber have on his contract?
I think Bieber has 2 years. I think he's actually done at 24. I think so. It'd be just like Goldschmidt, I think. Let me double check on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that definitely really partially depends then on how you view the Cardinals, whether you think they can be good next year or not. I do.
Right.
But, you know, I could see that being okay. I'm not really super sad to lose Donnie because we have Tommy Edman that can still be a great utility guy.
And you have Mason Wynn coming up. Yeah.
You have Mason Wynn coming. I also really believe in Nolan Gorman, even though he's been slumping here a little bit. I think that dude's the real deal. And so in my opinion, you know, Donovan or Edman, one of each of those could be traded for something because they're both kind of extraneous at this point.
And then let me ask you, in
25, by the way.
Yeah, it's yes and no, Adam. So I did confirm. So he signed a 1-year contract. Yes, he's an unrestricted free agent in 25, but he technically can be a free agent in 24 because he's only on a 1-year contract because of arbitration.
Yeah. Arbitration year 3, exactly.
But he's still on arbitration.
He's still on arbitration. Yeah.
Geez, okay. I didn't even realize that. Okay, yeah. No, I'm a much, much bigger fan of that trade than. I think the Cardinals would be really happy to have that still in arbitration and then, you know, get a good chance to work out a deal with him.
Because, like, right now his 1-year contract is only $10 million, which for a top end, I almost said wide receiver, and then I almost said quarterback. I don't know why. top end of the rotation pitcher for $10 million? Yeah. I mean, like, you look at Verlander, who's making, like, 20-something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they wasted about that much on Ozuna. The first year they had him. That's
a very good point.
Absolutely. To me, that's a great trade. It sucks to lose Libertor because you need your pitching, but at the same time, you know, he probably won't ever be Shane Bieber, and Shane Bieber's still in arbitration. Exactly.
And he would fill that slot really for him, honestly. So.
Right. And with Walker, you know, you're kind of Tyler O'Neill might be a little extra. And, you know, like I said, Brendan Donovan maybe is a guy you don't need as much. So it's kind of trading from surplus into area of need, which I think is a good thing to do.
For sure. The one question I have is, would you rather give up Donovan, who is better in the outfield as a utility player than Edman? You know what I mean? To me, like, when I look at, and I don't know why, but I'm so strong on Donovan. I think I'm just so impressed in how patient he can be at the plate. He's got that rare sense of power. He's also got a little bit of speed, but I like his ability to be able to play literally any position. Rather than Tommy Edman, who obviously Tommy Edman played the game I went to this past Friday. He was playing, I think, center field. I'm fairly certain. Yeah, Tommy Edman.
Yeah, he was. He played a couple.
Yeah.
At least a couple. They even left him in center field when Dylan Carlson came back.
Yeah, because Carlson was in the lineup. I'm fairly certain that, I mean, I have the damn scorecard. I'm pretty certain go ahead.
To me, like, Donovan can't play center. Tommy Edman can play center. Tommy Edman's much faster than Brendan Donovan because Tommy Edman's, like, just an absolute speed demon. I also don't see Tommy Edman playing first as well as Donovan because Donovan had, like, a split scoop, you know, while he's over. I'm like, God, you really can't put him anywhere. He looks like an actual first baseman. I don't know that Ed can do that.
No, and the Edman spelled a couple of times for Arenado, not last year, but the year before at third base, and he did not do very well at the third base position. Now, some of that, it could be from a developmental standpoint. You know, he's young. He's starting to come into his own and all that stuff, right? But he just didn't seem to do very well. To me, like, when I look at Edmund, it's like I don't see him at a corner outfield position. I see him, like, straight up the field, right? You're either putting him in at shortstop, second base, or center field. To your point, OJ, he's got a lot of speed. He's obviously a very good fielder that can track down a ball. Donovan, to me, might not be as speedy, but, again, you can put him literally anywhere in the infield. He's already shown you that. You can put him everywhere in the outfield, and he's already shown you that as well. And I think that their hitting stats are somewhat comparable. Edmund might have a slight advantage over Donovan, but I think Donovan could also, you know, be what Edmund would be in that standpoint. You know what I mean? So I think really it's just kind of like robbing Peter to give the Paul, because, you know, it just depends on which way you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, they both are versatile in their own ways, certainly. And honestly, like, yeah, you got to value Donovan's on base skill. That certainly is a more like contemporary way to be successful in baseball, whereas Tommy Edman has more of the hit tool, but he doesn't walk as much, but he walks enough. So I don't know. Either one of them you trade. Tommy Edman would probably have more value, though. You probably get more back for him just because he actually had like a 5 season last season. So like, dude has had some like stud seasons already. So.
And I was going to say, based upon his value alone, of course, I mean, looking at his contract, I mean, he's making like 4.2. So
now if you could give him Edmund instead and maybe keep Liberatore, that might be unfair. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see Cleveland taking that deal because they wouldn't have a pitcher. Then
they're going to do one or the other.
Place Bieber.
They're going to do Edmund, I think that, or they're going to do Donovan.
Yeah, I think if I'm Cleveland and I'm taking a look at this, knowing what my needs are, like, I'm going to give a pitcher, like, we need an offensive, or we need an outfielder, we need an infielder. I'm not going to take two infielders and an outfielder to get rid of a pitcher and not have anybody to follow up him, you know what I mean? So to me, it's you trade pitcher for pitcher, and then I'm at that point in time that takes care of the need that I'm getting rid of, and now I'm taking what I need, essentially.
Yeah. No, I was proposing Donovan and Edmund. I was saying you give them Donovan and O'Neill, or not Edmund and O'Neill, and then you maybe are able to throw in another piece other than Liberatore.
Oh, instead of Liberatore, yeah.
Yeah, that's way less valuable, maybe. Because that way, maybe we could keep some of our pitching that we desperately need.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd be okay with that as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just depends, I guess, on what which way that Cleveland wants to take it. Yeah.
We also need to get rid of, like, Yepes and Burleson, too, because they're completely extra on this team right now.
Yeah. So let me ask you this before we move on to the next question I have here, specifically around the Cardinals. I mean, do you think that even if we were able to pull off a miracle trade for Ohtani right now, do you think that would be able to turn around our season? You know, Jay, what's your thoughts process on that? Would Shohei be able to save our season?
I mean, Shohei could try. Maybe it would. I mean, you never know. Him and Lars Nootbaar kind of had a good time in Japan. Maybe it would, like, shift the clubhouse atmosphere enough where everyone starts playing better again. And, I mean, the only thing is I don't know that that's even a culture change is enough mid-season. I do worry that they didn't. They've lost their focus on some of the fundamentals that you need to be successful. And like, they need to like spring training and stuff to reinforce those again. So I'm going to say no. That's it. I'm going to say no on that.
And I was going to say, at what cost though? That's the problem. Like if we can get him, sure, that'd be great. But at what cost is that we're going to who are we going to lose in the process? Cause we're going to have to give up, you know, some serious
everybody,
you know. Yeah, that's my problem, and that's what's going to really screw us even more. We're not really in the market to lose, you know, great talent right now.
Yeah, the only thing, or not the only thing, but the thing that really sucks about you know, Shohei's his values, you don't even know where it's at. You know, like, no, and like even MLB execs are like, we have no idea what this guy's worth. So I've seen projections that you know, say that when you look at him in the value and a comparison and stuff like that, when I was doing research for this question specifically, was that his, you know, his value, some people have him as, you know, like an ace, but a little bit over the top. So essentially like what we have for Shane Bieber, but you would probably have to, instead of like Libitor, you would have, you know, Donovan, you probably give Edmund, and instead of Libitor, you probably give him Jim Montgomery or something like that, right? Yeah. Something that's, or not even Montgomery, but it wasn't Montgomery. It was, oh my God, Michaelis. You know what I mean? So that's what they say. So you're having to give, like, you know, your top end talent, but it's not as much over an ace. However, other people see it the exact opposite way, where some people say by value trading some point that he's worth more than Nato and Goldie in a trade. And I'm like, I don't know about that, but.
Well, I mean, he's going to walk away with a ridiculous contract, you know, whoever signs him.
Sure.
I mean, it's going to be crazy. You know, because he's going to be, in this free agent class, and it's going to be a lot of money. He's going to, and you know, the if the Cardinals weren't willing to budge over the offseason, really, I don't see them making any kind of move, you know, for towards somebody like that right now.
No, I definitely don't.
You know. I mean, I'm seeing some rumors here about, you know, one agent predicting he would get a 12-year, $600 million deal back in April is what somebody was saying.
So you know? Yeah. We'll see.
I don't know, but I'm just saying, you know, we're talking, you know, $50 million a year. I don't see the Cardinals swinging for that kind of
cash. The thing is, though, he has been
that kind of money. You know what I mean?
He has been linked to the Cardinals, though. Like, he has been linked to the Cardinals. But, yeah, he called pools last year to ask specifically about the culture in St. Louis. Like, there's been links to him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's going to be the biggest thing is, and it's not like, I don't think he's flat out come out and said, I want to get paid. Like, I want to be the most paid player, blah, 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 blah. I mean, the only thing I've heard is he wants to be on a winning team. That's what scares me now is, like, right when we go,
well, we're not a winning team.
Yeah. Like, right when we go into the offseason where he might be available to be like, hey, you want to come play with us, and be like, what? You just lost 100
maybe things would have changed a little bit. Yeah.
Fucking Angels, dude. No thanks. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to apparently not be on their mind. So.
Yeah. No, it's like I said, it's like getting a middle of the order hitter and an ace pitcher rolled up in one. So beyond that, he's beyond even being a good baseball player. He's the kind of guy that people want to go see. So
he would bring in a shitload of people
to see him. So every team is going to be so enthralled with this guy. I just don't see the Cardinals ever owning up the kind of cash.
Nope. No way. It's going to be one of these teams that throws money at everybody. It's going to be like a Dodgers type team that just, you know, just shits out money.
It's going to be the Mets.
It's going to be something. Yeah, it's going to be one of those top teams.
I think it's going to be the Mets.
Wouldn't surprise me if the Mets, because they're another one of those teams that just throws money at everybody.
Steve Cohen's got a little, you know, got to be in his little billionaire pitching contest with everybody else. So it's not working out so well for him this year. So you know he's going to double down.
Exactly. And I think he's been very, conservative. The pitching match or the pitching contest, as you said, I think brings up a valid point, because he's been like, you can tell Cohen's pissed about what San Diego's been doing.
Yeah.
He felt he had players. And, you know, all of a sudden now they're going to San Diego. I mean, he lost out in the Juan Soto shit, although we lost out in Juan Soto as well. But yeah, he lost out in Bogart. You know, it's just like, it's crazy, man. Like, and that's why I think that, again, we've talked about this. We can definitely bring it up at a different time, but it probably not this podcast, because we probably don't have the time to do it. But, you know, we need, like, there has to be a goddamn salary cap in baseball. Yeah. There has to be. And I don't care. These people that say, oh, baseball doesn't need a salary cap. It needs a minimal spending limit. As well as I can understand that you definitely need a minimal spending limit.
Okay.
I think that, to that point, the reason why people say that is so, like, teams like the Athletics can't trim their shitty, you know, shitty team or whatever. But again, I don't even want to get into that. The fact is that there's no salary cap. Then say all of a sudden Elon Musk decides I'm going to buy a baseball team and sink every single penny that I have into that baseball team. What do you think that's going to happen?
Well, of course.
You know what I mean? Like
it's literally going to be MLB the Show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's literally what it'll be. He'll just buy everybody. Just buy all these guys, throw them here. I don't give a shit about money. I'm just going to collect them. He's going to be another freaking, Kroenke and just collect teams. So he'll look at me and all my pictures of all my, all my trophies.
No, I agree. I would see a salary floor with a salary cap, because the reason what the floor is because with profit sharing and stuff, teams like Oakland literally could just get zero fans and, just keep their payroll as low as possible and just collect the biggest profit they can without having to even try. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly right.
Too many owners getting like that, to where you have too many teams that are like clearly not even trying to win and are just easy wins for every team and stuff like that. That's bad for the sport. So you force them to pay something, and then you include a hard salary cap, which to me the players would be fools not to do, because the luxury tax is basically a salary cap with no soft salary floor. So, like, they're just getting screwed on that one. If it was me, I'd be like, yeah, hard cap, hard floor. Let's go. So. Yeah.
Well, and I think that that's something that we can definitely discuss at a different time, and like what our ideals would be. I agree with you, OJ, that there definitely needs to be a floor, but there definitely needs to be a cap. So let's get to this topic that we've kind of already talked about a little bit earlier on in the podcast. And we definitely have pretty much straight up talked about it here. Should Marmol keep his job? Adam, you brought up a lot of good points. When it comes to, him just being young, not making the right decisions. Uh-huh. So I'm just going to ask you the question, should he keep his job?
Straight out, I'll just tell you, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
The reason why is he obviously is young. He's inexperienced. That is something I know that we have younger coaches out there. However, the thing is that we need somebody with experience that can come in here and actually manage this team the proper way and give these guys the guidance and using that experience. I'm not saying that he's a bad guy. It's just we need somebody with experience that knows this, how to actually play, and that's the thing with Marmol. He just doesn't, and he's making a lot of stupid mistakes. The fact is too, I'm not going to leave him out to leave him hanging. I think a lot of it is also our front office too that's giving him not giving him a fair chance here either. They're not giving him any they're not helping him any,
For sure.
and I'm feeling that as well. But I think that we need a shakeup of management in general. So I would say that it needs to be a shakeup on both levels, if you ask me.
OJ, so what's your thoughts, even though we kind of already got him? Do you believe that Marmol should be fired?
Well, it really does depend for me on, because I'm not sure to what extent the decisions he's making are his own. I mean, he was a pretty good baseball player by most people's standards, like he was in the minors at least somewhere. I don't know what level, but the point is, I think he got to AAA, but the point is he should know baseball. Maybe he doesn't, but he should know it. So on the off chance that he's essentially running a script given to him by the front office every game, then I'd say no. But I mean, yeah, that's really what it is. It's just hard to evaluate when you don't know who's responsible for what.
Yeah, and that's my biggest thing too. When I came and took a look at this, I was trying to be as impartial as possible and try to get my emotions out of it. But when I take a look at it, obviously he seems to have the clubhouse's backing. Not in Goldie, obviously made that very public statement that it's not all on him, that they need to be better. Wainwright also said the same thing. But to me, what I don't like is how he consistently plays favorites, especially when it comes to the pitching staff. And he is very unwilling to change. And what I mean by that is, look at what happened with Jordan Hicks at the beginning of the season. He continued to go to that well over and over and over and over and over and over again. And Jordan Hicks couldn't take it. Then he goes, okay, well, we'll take you off of those like really high end a pressure situation so you can find it. And then Jordan Hicks was starting to be light out, but he needed a break, but he did it way too late. And it seems to always be what we talk about with Marmol, especially when it comes to the bullpen and the pitching staff, is he is very reactive and not proactive at all. And right. to me, that's why I say that he cannot keep his job, because he doesn't have an understanding of that. You know, I made the point last week that I believe, you know, it needs to be the pitching coach needs to be there. There needs to be somebody in his ear being able to say something to him when it comes to the pitcher specifically, because, you know, you can fill out a lineup card and stuff like that, but his control of the pitching staff is just atrocious. So to me, that's why I say he definitely cannot. He can't keep his job. And now he's probably going to keep his job until the end of this season, because Cardinals really don't make a lot of midseason changes. But I don't see him keeping his job, you know, past 23. Could, but who knows at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was getting at, though. Like, I don't know to what extent the bullpen moves are scripted. Like, oh, you're going to pitch this guy, it's this guy, and he's going to pitch for this many innings or whatever. You know, like, I don't know what they're feeding him. Like, there is a strong possibility the front office is interfering with all the operations there, in which case you can't hold too much up on him.
No, exactly. And it's frustrating for us as fans, because we don't know who to blame. And the only person that you can go after is the head coach. You know what I mean? For any sport. So.
Right. Mm. But, you know, that said, you know, I do also, you know, I did now think about the, what's it called? The, all right. The comment. That's right. Sorry. The comment that I had with earlier in this podcast also. You know, I remind myself of that, and it's kind of like, yeah, that doesn't show that he knows what he's doing, but maybe he could learn from it. I don't know. Just, I can't hold too tactical stuff against him, I guess, really.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. Well, let's get to off the Cardinals here, because we obviously can continue to talk about their demise for, you know, 16 hours, it feels like, but let's talk about, keep on the MLB. Let's talk about another real big one there in Oakland, right? So the Oakland Athletics here are leaving for Vegas. The fans put up their reverse protest, reverse boycott of the game, where they sold out. And they, you know, they sold out, and they wore t-shirts of just trying to get the owner, Fisher, to sell, right? John Fisher is obviously trying to move the team to Vegas. They got approval from Vegas to be able to have some public funding to build the stadium. And you know, he's been trying to get a stadium deal in Oakland done for years that has not been, you know, happened. So Adam, let's start with you here. Do you believe Oakland leaving for Vegas is good or bad for baseball?
Well, I mean, I wish that they would sell the damn team. I wish that that would be, ultimately, because the fans have demanded it. I love the fact that, you know, not to get too off topic, but I love their reverse protest, or whatever you want to call it, reversed boycott the other night was pretty awesome. They all piled in and were screaming, you know, sell the team, because it is what it is. But I mean, moving into Vegas, I don't think that Vegas needs yet another team. Personally, I don't see it as a great thing for baseball.
Yeah, go on, OJ.
I think Vegas is overrated as a city.
100% it is. It's like, not even a city that most people like literally even live in. People go there primarily to freaking gamble and visit, and it's like, you know what I mean? That's all it is. You know, it's not like a city that's like St. Louis, you know what I mean? That doesn't have that heritage to it at all. So, I mean, maybe it's just me hating on Vegas, but it just isn't a place that I would think that a baseball team should be. Especially for what baseball stood for, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, I don't think Vegas is like some city that's like on the rise or so. It's not like going to be a booming city. Like you said, it's basically limited. It's a tourist trap place. Like, it's one giant.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Basically what it is.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's very, but you know, hey, whatever. Everything's got to go.
It's not a city that in my opinion, fits the bill of a baseball team, in my opinion.
I agree 100%.
So I will say a couple things here, and I'm definitely going to try to not go on one of my famous rants here, right? But the fans are obviously upset that the Athletics are leaving Oakland. Players in this league are upset that the Athletics are leaving Oakland, including Bryce Harper, who is from Vegas, by the way, who doesn't want the Athletics to say, he said, much rather just have an expansion team because it's just going to not feel right. He's like, I feel bad for the young kids in Oakland who are all of a sudden not going to have a team. The people that have been there forever. He's like, and plus, where are you going to have a fan base? It's going to take 10 years to get a fan base going. And he's like, he said that he disagrees because you take a look at it to me. And he actually brought up a really good point. I'm not a Bryce Harper fan, but this was actually very well thought out. He brought up the Vegas Golden Knights. And he brought up the Vegas Raiders. Uh-huh. One obviously was an expansion team. One was a relocated team. The expansion team out in a very small, on a lot smaller of a venue, outsells every single night compared to the Raiders team, which is saying something, especially when it comes to the fact that the Raiders play every Sunday. They only play, you know, 8 games at home or 9, depending on, you know, the whatchamacallit, you know, whether they have the extra week or whatever, because now they play 17 weeks, you know, at home, it compared to 41 home games for mm-hmm. Vegas. The average amount that Vegas has over the Raiders, or the Knights have over the Raiders, I should say, because they're both Vegas at this point, is quadrupled. And mm-hmm. I thought that was very, that's a very interesting point.
Well, I want to add to that real quick, if that's okay. Because sure. We're talking, you know, packing in people into stadiums. What's more important than packing people into stadiums? TV market. Yep. That's what people really look at, because selling tickets is one thing, but how big is your TV market? That's where you get a lot of money. And the fact is, if Vegas would actually bring in the Athletics, they would be the smallest TV market in all of baseball. And do you think that's going to really sell them?
No.
But here's the thing. This is my opinion. Yeah, and
I mean, the A's, they're not going to be able to, you know, I don't think they're going to really have the success like the Knights or the Raiders in the stadium. And I really don't think they're going to have the success in the TV market being the smallest anyway. And they're already a subpar team to begin with. So anyway, I'll get off my rant.
So here's my thing. John Fisher is another fucking Stan Kroenke is what he is, because legitimately this has happened here where when the Athletics were doing well. Right. He recognized that, you know, hey, there's a chance to be able to jump on a lot of the revenue. Right. So what he does is he trades away a lot of the high players that are making quite a bit of the salary cap, or like the, you know, the budget or whatever, does not replace them, but uses that essentially that success as an excuse and raise prices. But he doesn't put the money back into the stadium. He doesn't put it back into the facilities. He doesn't do any of that. He pockets the money, the profits, in order to try to get moved over to Vegas so he can start that, so he can be an owner of the building as well. Very much like Kroenke, right? Yep. And then what he does, very much like what Kroenke did to St. Louis when LA, he goes to Oakland and says, listen, I'm going to move this team unless we can get a deal going on, right? 4 different congressmen from Oakland came forth and said, the reason why we stopped our litigation with him for after 2.5 years is because he continued to bring up Vegas. Well, Vegas will give us this. Vegas will give us this. Vegas will give us this. And we felt like we were losing in a losing battle because he was using Vegas as a leverage. At some point we were like, screw it. You obviously don't want anything to do with us. So what are we going to do? You know what I mean? We're not just going to crap out a $40 billion stadium for you. That's not how this, you know, shit works. It needs to be a partnership, right?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of angry people to this. And to me, this isn't good for baseball. This isn't bad for baseball. This is fucking terrible for baseball. The pendulum is swinging for baseball. It's boring. It's fucking slow as shit. You're trying to speed up the game. And also, by the way, try to have more offense into this game. Less and less people are going to baseball games. Statistically, it shows, not even just in the St. Louis market, because we sell it everywhere, but statistically, baseball is just so boring. The younger kids, the generation underneath us, it doesn't care about baseball anymore, except for obviously those diehard guys, right? But the casual people, unless you're in a market like St. Louis, which is like, that's your birthright, you know, to be a Cardinals fan almost, you don't care about baseball. And now all of a sudden you're going to turn off so many other young fans across the entire nation, because they're going to look at that and be like, well, that's just wrong. Why would you do that? You know what I mean? And it's not like the Rams where they moved from, oh, well, they originally were in L.A. They moved here. Oh, and now they get to move back. And, you know, all that kind of gets swept under the rug. Because I'm telling you what's going to happen, and I'm going to call this out right now on our 27th session, that Oakland is eventually going to move to Vegas. I mean, at this point, there's really nothing stopping them. Hopefully, there is something that will stop them, but we know that's probably not going to happen. But what's going to happen after that? John Fisher is going to immediately start putting money right back into the team, and they're going to be a championship competitive team in the AL. I guarantee you that's what's going to end up happening. And that's just going to be crap because then it's going to be like, okay, it's the exact same thing Kroenke did with the fucking Rams forever. He got the two Super Bowls, winning one, but after he fucking finally invested into the team and not gave the middle finger to the fans that propped them up at the first point. So, I mean, I got to get off my rant because I don't want to get too angry about it. But to me, this isn't just bad for baseball. This is just terrible for baseball. If you really want to put more excitement into it, and you see what everybody else is doing, right? The NHL is doing this. The MLS is doing this. The NFL is at 32 teams, and they're consistently talking about expanding. Baseball, you want something new? Expand to two fucking other markets. Make it 32 teams instead of 30. NBA is doing the exact same thing. So why can't you? You know what I mean? All right, I got to get off my rant. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyways. it's just a bad look for baseball in general, but
yeah,
let's
bad look for any time they move a team from one city to another. But it's always, especially these days, it's always because a billionaire could make more money in the other market, at least short term.
Yep.
So that's really all it is. That's all it's about. And it's disgusting, really. I hate it.
Yeah, they don't seem to care about, you know, anything else except for that profit. So Well, let's talk about another shitty St. Louis sports team right now. Let's talk about the Blues. Obviously, we know that the offseason is officially upon us with the Stanley Cup being over. We have hired two coaches. We've hired Mike Weber as our assistant coach. And we hired Michael Babcock, not Mike Babcock. This is Michael Babcock, the son of Mike Babcock, who was the head coach. Michael Babcock will be our skills coach. Little background on these guys. So Mike Weber played as a D-man for 9 years in NHL and suited up for 351 games in his career. Michael Babcock played a little bit of like junior college hockey, then played in the France League. I didn't even know that they had a French league at all. That's kind of crazy. But then he also had 3 years of coaching experience, one of which was last year. I think it was for the Ottawa Senators. I could be wrong on that, but I'm trying to remember. I think it was. And then 2 years. What was that, OJ?
Oh, I said you're right about that. You are correct.
Okay,
he was cool. Last. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. And then 2 years prior to that was in college, where he actually got to serve with his dad for 1 year. So let me just ask you, OJ. Do you think that these two signings here, these two coaches can make a difference for our team?
I have no idea, honestly. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Apparently, Berube was involved in this search pretty heavily. So let's say optimistically, yes, they'll help enforce the style that Berube wants to play. Help get on, keep on Jordan Kyrou about some of the things he needs to work on, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and this is, and OJ, you brought up exactly the reason why I say that, you know, I said it could be. That's what I wrote down as a yes or no. It's a could be, right? Specifically because now you're going to allow Berube to run the team the way that he needs to run it. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, having Armstrong and Berube on the same page is going to go a long way of getting the message, you know, corrected across the board for the Blues. So I do believe that it potentially could be a good thing. We just obviously don't know too much about them. Adam, what's your thoughts going into this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, being a defensive system coach right now would probably be ideal, considering that's one of our, you know, we've identified as certainly an area that we need to improve on. Absolutely. So I don't think that we're going to get any worse by doing this at this point. I think that it could have potentially a huge impact, in my opinion, you know. And it was an easy change to make for us, in my opinion. So, and it's not like we have to make any big defensive contract changes or anything else, you know, along the way. So we'll see. You know, I'm hopeful. You know, sometimes that's what it takes is some coaching shakeups or whatever. I still think that Brewer Bay is still the right guy, and I'm glad that they, you know, that Army's still keeping him there, and they're here to, you know, support him as well with some, you know, assistant coaches that will have his back and hopefully will, you know, defend him as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the Blues are at a very weird offseason, right? Because there's a lot of things that can be done, but can actually be pulled off, if that makes sense. What I mean by that is, like, you take a look at our D-line. Like, and our D-line, truthfully, like, on paper is not terrible, but they played like crap last year, and I do believe there's a lot of bloating there. That's the biggest thing. Can we somehow renegotiate or, like, restructure some of these contracts? Or can we trade away a player like Colton Parayko or Torrey Krug or Justin Faulk, whatever, you know, one of these players, to be able to try to like shift around some money? Because I really believe we're going to have to go out and get some higher end talent. And I don't believe that's available to us with what we currently have on our salary cap. You know what I mean? And I know that's the reason why Doug Armstrong made the moves in this past offseason and obviously try to get some draft capital. I just don't know what it's going to look like. But in my opinion, I think we need to go out and be a little bit more aggressive in this offseason. I think we at least need to get one player on this offseason that has some sort of star power. You know what I mean? That's just my opinion. But I think that looking at the Blues for the 23-24 season, that's kind of what I'm at, right? I mean, you guys kind of agree with that assessment? What's your thoughts going into the season?
So I honestly think I would like to see him get rid of either like Krug or Scandella. I'm not like I don't have my hair on fire to move Parayko or anything like that.
But they need really either
get rid of one of these like massive defenseman contracts that were completely underperforming last year. If Armstrong can do that and get himself some payroll flexibility, then you know he can start looking at adding. Maybe he could do both in the same offseason. But or maybe at the deadline if they happen to have a better season, you never know. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And it will take aggression because teams aren't going to be lining up to take these guys either. So
you know, Adam, what's your thought process going into the 23-24 season for the Blues?
I mean, as far as, you know, being able to trade some guys off, obviously, you know, when we're talking about Parayko, those guys are already locked in. You know, these are all contracts with full no trade clauses, you know. Obviously we'd have to work with them if, you know, and it's going to make it very tough for us. So, I mean, realistically speaking, if we, you know, without, you know, getting these guys to agree, you know, to make a move as well, I'm thinking maybe we might be able to move, you know, maybe Letty or Scandella at this point. Maybe we can make some moves there, but I don't really see a lot of options for us. I'm hoping that our draft, we can, you know, maybe we'll see how that goes. If we're able to trade up even in the first round or not, or at least in future rounds. But I'm hopeful that this draft can hopefully patch up, you know, our D line for sure.
Agreed. And, you know,
it's going to be tough because that's not normally something you see in the first round or the, you know, typically as well. So it's going to be interesting. You know, first round usually is going to be one of your, you know, you know, your offensive line. So that's, you're sorry that you're, you know, you're these guys that they're defensive guys usually go later on. So, you know, your wingers and whatnot will probably be able to pick up, you know, if we have to go and trade off or if we have to dump one of these guys, maybe, you know, you know, maybe Sammy Blay or somebody. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that, you know, at this point, you know, in Armstrong, we trust still, but it's going to be a very difficult offseason. We'll definitely address that when the offseason gets a little bit closer to the draft and stuff like that for us. Let's take a look here at the NHL updates. Since we just talked about the offseason's officially over. We've already kind of talked about it, I think, but the Vegas Golden Knights have won the Stanley Cup. They did it in 5 games, beating the Panthers in that last game, which was an ass spanking 9-3. The one thing that I got to say here, guys, is I really do believe more than anything now is that the NHL is fixed. And I don't mean it like it's fixed like WWE, right? Or whatever, wrestling, where everything is scripted. What I do believe is that the NHL sets certain teams up for success. And they do that also with officiating. They don't try to make it as egregious and stuff like that, because obviously they have to be able to save face. But let's be honest. Vegas was set up to win this cup well before, this season started. You know, it's only their sixth season and they've won a Stanley Cup. But they've already been to a Stanley Cup before, too. If you guys remember their rookie season, so to speak, when they first came into the league, they went to the finals and lost to Washington at that year. Right. I believe that the NHL did everything to give Vegas the opportunity to win a cup because they wanted Vegas to be successful, because they knew that Vegas was becoming a huge like hotspot for bringing sports teams there. Right. They knew that the NFL was right around the corner. There was talks about MLB. There's been talks about, a lot of other teams, MLS and stuff like that coming there. They wanted to be the first one to plant roots there. So they did, and they wanted to be very successful. Why I believe that it's somewhat set up in that aspect of things, when you are trying to create a roster that has a lot of moving pieces, a lot of salary, and a lot of balancing, it's a huge balancing act, right? We just talked about that. What Doug Armstrong is going to have to do to try to find some talent and stuff like that. It really throws a wrench in your plans when you know that you're going to have to put up a bunch of players that are unprotected, that are out of your core group. Now, if you're a crappy team at that time, like the Red Wings were, you didn't care, right? You had a bunch of young players and stuff like, go ahead, OJ.
Oh, no, I was saying exactly right.
Yeah. But if you're a contender, that really screws over your plans. What really, really screws over your plans, though, is that each team going into the draft, the expansion draft that the Vegas Knights had, I think it was the 2016 expansion draft. They literally were given six months to decide on how they want to be able to do this stuff. To me, that is unexcusable. You knew what was coming down the line. This expansion draft that the Knights had were unlike anything else that they had, right? The teams were on the rise. Payroll was on the rise. NHL in general was on the rise. So more money and all that stuff that happened involved to it. What they needed to do, and I said it back then, is that the NHL should have expanded from 30 to 32 teams in the same year. So that way, Seattle, which obviously came into the year or into the league 3 years ago, would have been on the same playing field as Vegas. Instead of Vegas getting all of these guys that, you know, are not like superstars, but they're like high-end B-roll players, if that makes sense, right? Like if you have a team that like every single player in the position is an overall 80, where you look at like the Blues that has, okay, three players that are like 95, but everybody else is like in the 70s, which team is going to win? You know what I mean? And that's exactly what Vegas was set up for, is they got all these players. I mean, they got David Perron for free. They got James Neal for free. I mean, like it's, to me, I was very upset about that. And I'm upset even now that especially with how the draft went, the fact that Connor Bedard's going to Chicago, I believe firmly this just proves that the NHL is rigged in that aspect of things. I don't think that they rig every single game, but I do believe that they rig certain franchises to have more success than others. You know, what are you guys' thoughts on that? Do you think I'm crazy? Do you think that I'm, you know, I'm just flat out wrong? What's your thoughts?
Well, I've had those thoughts in the back of my mind because it seems to happen too often. Like, think about it. So Vegas was super successful in their first year. Seattle has now been super successful in their second year. Then you look at other sports. MLS is a big one. Like, a lot of MLS expansion clubs are suspiciously successful their first year of operation.
No, we were too. Even the Blues were successful. You know, much more successful as far as getting to the final back in the early 70s than we were, you know, any other time.
Well, that's just because we finished as the best expansion team compared to the best original six team. Yeah, getting there was a much easier path.
Yeah, like we had a terrible. We had to just take the cast offs from other teams And then they just threw all the shit teams in one league, and they put all the good teams in the other league, and then they just got to stomp whoever won the West, which happened to be us 3 years ago.
Yeah, and the only reason why that we went to those cups is because of Glenn Hall. You know what I mean? That was like our AJ McCarron, so to speak. Like, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe he came over. Like, he dropped off and we were able to sign him. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it is what it is.
Just making a point that we were there as well.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm with you there. I understand.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, because, like, our soccer team this year, too, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we were not expected to be, you know, all that great, honestly.
Well, yeah, people
finished
last. And now one of the top teams.
And now we're, one of the top teams, if not first, we're right up there, you know, consistently, yep.
Maybe it can be hard to predict MLS since it's not, like, the top league in the world. So there's more room for a good front office to make more of a difference, I guess, than if you're scraping up against the very top of what the world has to offer already, you know?
Yeah, and that makes sense as well. Well, Adam, what's your thought process on this? Do you believe that, you know, the NHL is rigged, or like that crazy? Like, what's your thought process?
There's certainly some times whenever it certainly looks that way. That's for damn sure. It's been awfully suspicious, you know, and I know that's been the so-called rigged, you know, scenario has been tossed around for quite some time. While I'm not a complete conspiracy theorist, I do think that there are some unfair advantages, though, that are thrown out there, certainly. And of course, sometimes, especially, you know, with these newer expansion teams and whatnot, of course, they're going to get the upper hand. I understand, because they're trying to build a, fan base. But at the same time, you know, it's these teams that have, you know, we were going, you know, 50 plus years, 52 years without a cup. You know, it kind of sucks, you know, whenever you see Vegas over here saying, it took 6 whole years, you know, in the process.
We finally made it.
We finally made it after 6 whole years.
No, 100%. I mean, I think they have certain players that they try to promote too, which is why certain guys get away with so much crap. I mean, I remember playing the Predators one year in like the Western Conference Final, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they had PK Subban. And I remember him literally just standing one of our dudes up at the blue line, just punching him in the face with his gloves on.
And nobody calls shit.
During pace play, refs right there, nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, that's literally, you can't do that. That's a penalty every time. What are you doing? And then you look at the Kadri no goalie interference, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, we've seen much softer goalie interferences this playoffs alone. That's, yeah, I mean, there's just certain players they want to bend over backwards to allow them to be successful for whatever reason.
Well, and yeah. My opinion of it, just real quick, is that it does seem that they're, and I think that part of the playoffs, I know, Josh, you mentioned that as well, is that they do have a tendency to usually kind of get soft on calling penalties a lot of times in the playoffs. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, I think that sometimes they are letting a little too much go in some instances, and they're not really enforcing consistently. That's, I think, probably the biggest gripe for me, you know?
For sure. Yeah,
I mean, they let more go, but like literally just punching a dude in the.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's pretty ridiculous. Like, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, I understand, like, okay, that could have been a penalty, you know, it's borderline or whatever. Okay. Maybe we'll let this one go. But at the same time, also, they should be watching for that player's consistency as well. If they have a tendency to be dirty on the ice, then call them out, you know, just like soccer, you know, handing out yellow cards, and then eventually you had too many, you're out. You know, it's the same. It's sort of the same in my opinion, is like, you know, especially when you get in playoff hockey, I know that you're going to let a few things go, but at the same time, if they're going to be playing dirty, they're going to keep, you know, ramping up to see how much they can get away with. And you got to call that out. You know what I mean?
Take a look at game 4 in the final, right?
Yeah.
The prime very example. End of the game.
That's a great example.
And it was a very, Vegas is winning 3-2. Panthers have some momentum going towards the net. A scrambles in front of the net where Kachuk gets hit into the goaltender, which was Hill, Aiden Hill for Vegas. He gets up. The puck is out in play, right? And then there's a whistle. Yep. And everyone's like, okay, what's the penalty? No penalty was awarded, right? Nothing happened. Literally, the puck's in play. Not like he lost sight of it. He literally he blows the whistle because he wanted Aiden Hill to be able to recover.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that's crap. That's bullshit. Not playoff hockey. That's not even hockey in general. Then what happens afterwards where Kachuk, who's not even looking, gets completely just destroyed with a cross check in his back.
That was a dirty ass hit, man.
Oh, 100%. And he's looking right at this play and doesn't call a penalty there either. That's when I literally put my hands up and did the whole, like, you know, like wash my hands with it. Cause I'm like, I know they're going to win now. Like you cannot look at this play. You can't even look. So if you blow the whistle because you know, whatever, you thought it was an illegal play. Okay, whatever. But then like the dude just gets cross checked and all he could see was Kachuk on his jersey. Yep. I'm telling you right now it's as a guy that's played a decent amount of hockey, I can tell you right now that is just an unspoken rule that you can't do. You know what I mean? Even in like a non-hitting league, you don't do something like that because it's so fucking dangerous. If Kachuk wasn't obviously Kachuk got hit in the ground, but let's say like Kachuk was in the motion of like trying to like go forward, like he's really skating forward. So he lifts up his leg and then gets pushed. He's going to fall flat on his face and his neck. Oh. You know what I mean? So I'm just telling you, like, that it's not safe, but it's just not a play that should have been let go. So I don't know. 100%. Like, to me, it is what it is. Like, we can talk a lot about that forever, but the NHL to me has lost a lot of credibility. I used to always say that there's a lot of virtue in what the NHL is, but now that I've gotten older and I'm starting to see through some of the facades, it's just. It is what it is.
Gary Bettman's a piece of shit too, so whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, guys, let's get to our final topic here, and it's going to be a quick one. The NBA Straw Hat Tournament update.
We don't have to cover this. We can keep going. We don't have to cover this week. We're already running out of time.
So the Nuggets win, and Josh wins the Straw Hat Tournament. Woo! Okay, yeah, that's what that felt like. Because it wasn't my Warriors. But yes,
damn it.
The Nuggets beat the Heat, and let's be honest here, the Heat were just completely outmatched. If they would have had Hero, it would have been different, but they got dominated in game one, dominated in game three, dominated in game four, dominated in game five, and barely won game two.
Yeah, it was a no-doubter, sadly.
Yeah. But
and we had to watch freaking Stan Kroenke and his goddamn trophy.
Oh my God, dude.
And then Denver went to shit. Shootings everywhere. There's a cop that like had his arm ripped off by a fire truck today. It's a shit show in Denver, man.
Dude, but what was even crazier to me was that it was so funny. So I was sitting there watching the post game, right? And Kroenke is sitting there. He's getting asked a question for the interview, like the interviewer. And she's asking the question, and she leans. He leans away from the mic to whisper in her
fucking ear.
And I'm like, "What are you doing?
Talking to the mic, you retard!" I'm upset.
People in St. Louis specifically were like, "Wow, even more evidence that Kroenke's like biting." Yeah. He's just gonna like whisper like inappropriate in ears. But it's just like speak into the microphone, dude. What the hell are you doing?
She's holding the mic, and he's like, "Nah, I'm gonna whisper in your ear, baby." Yeah. Super creepy.
Like, oh my God, it was super creepy as fucking thing. I'm like, good.
And
Lord.
It was weird.
And you could tell she was so uncomfortable.
Like talking to the fucking mic. Anyway, whatever.
That's why we shouldn't allow people to be billionaires, dude. It does things to people. Makes you think you can literally just do whatever you want.
I think we need to pass a law. Stan Kroenke can never own a sports team again. What a piece of shit.
Definitely pass off. I don't know him that experience.
Of course, I had to see, you know, ESPN, all of Stan Kroenke and all of his trophies from the past couple of years, you know. And
it's so funny that you do that once you start investing money. Aw.
Yeah, here he is with the Stanley Cup and, you know, with all this crap. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to see this shit.
Yeah, what most people don't know is he actually tried to move the Avalanche to fucking California. I'm not joking.
Not surprised.
The NHL shot that down immediately, which I'm not surprised because that's one of the more, well, not in recent years, obviously, besides the one cup they won, but like it was a historic franchise for a very long time when you had Joe Sakic and, you know, and Adam Flint and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And obviously Patrick Waugh, but yeah. Anyways.
So I guess he was also planning on transferring then the Nuggets too.
Yes, he was. If I remember correctly,
it's like a package deal, pretty much, I would think.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Wow. Just move a mile out to LA. Well, there you go. Yeah. Fans of Denver, I hope you enjoy it. There you go.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's head here to our sign off and get out of here.
I am happy for the Joker. I'll just say that and I'll move on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Him. You know, good for a Serbian to be able to use that platform. Yeah.
Happy for our Serbian friends that we work with. So there you go.
Hopefully they have some good rakia, not vodka. If you're listening, whoever you know who I'm talking to, but
yep.
Rakia.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, hit the listeners here.
Hit us up.
Our socials.
Facebook.com/TheHometownLosers, LOUSERS, or Twitter.com/HometownLosers. Give us a like. Hit us up. Also, interact with us a little bit. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be posting out some content out there, so you can always keep up to date with us on Facebook or Twitter. Back to you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, again, we definitely love hearing from you guys. If you have specific questions, please ask. We would definitely love, you know, your input here if you believe that Marmol should be fired and stuff like that, because we know that's a hot topic right now in St. Louis. OJ, what's your game of the week?
Got to be the one team that's still in a playoff hunt. STL SC versus Nashville on
Saturday. Go STL.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny, too.
So it'll be a battle. A battle of the teams that refer to it as soccer still.
Touche. Touche. There you go. I was going to say it should be a good game because obviously Nashville is second place in the Eastern Conference. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Like every week, I really appreciate your time, your effort. I appreciate the listeners listening in as well. Really do enjoy being a member of the Hometown Losers here. So we will catch everybody here next week. Make sure to contact us on our social media to ask any of the questions you have, or to ask us to talk about any of the subjects that you want to. But until next time, guys, we will see you next week here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.